We're holding on. Oh, okay. We're holding on Memtaladama Dave, about 15 lines from the bottom of the line begins delay, 4 lines from the end of the narrow line. We started talking about yesterday about the din that the Mishnah tells us, that if a person sells his eved to somebody in Chutz-Lartis, then that eved automatically goes free. It's a knas for having made him leave Eretz Yisrael, either that he's lost the mitzvah of living in Eretz Yisrael, or he's lost the mitzvah of Lois Lartis, the mitzvah that depends on being in Eretz Yisrael, like Truma and Meister and whatnot. So, Amar Rabbo, Shonali Rabbi Yechanan, and Rabbi Yechanan taught me as follows. Eved Sheyotza Acha Rabbi L'Suria, if you have an Eved who followed his master to Syria, meaning, now, Syria, we learned in the first parak, our areas nowadays are parts of Syria, parts of Lebanon, parts of maybe Iraq also, that David HaMelech conquered in his times, but he did that before he had fully conquered Eretz Yisrael, therefore it had the din of Kibush Yochid. It had the din of a conquest that was done by individuals rather than by the Jewish people collectively, and therefore Syria winds up being, in some ways, like Eretz Yisrael, in some ways not. One of them is that this concept of if an Eved is brought over there, then he goes, that if an Eved is brought there, then he goes free, applies to Syria as well. So if this Eved followed his master to Syria, and then his master sold him to somebody else there, then he goes free. So even though he went there at first, he willingly went there, you can't say based on that, as the Gemara is going to explain why, you can't say based on that he lost his ability to now take advantage of the takanas chachamim and go free. Okay, well, I'll find a clear ibidus chos. Why didn't Rav Chiya teach a braisa that says that in a case like that, the eved lost his chos? He can't protest anymore and say, wait a minute, I don't want to be taken out of Eretz Yisrael because he went there voluntarily. The answer is, leikasha, kancha das rabbi lachzer, kancha en das rabbi lachzer. The difference is, what was his master's intention originally when he went to Syria? Did he go there intending to come back or not? If he went not intending to come back, then the Eved has no claim. You knew when I brought you here that I'm planning to settle here in Syria. And if you didn't protest at the time, and in fact we learned at the end of Ksubas that an Eved has the ability to say, I want to move to Eretz Yisrael and you have to come with me or else set me free. And vice versa, Eina Kol Mitzian, the Eved has the right to protest his master taking him to Syria. Yeah, we learned that at the end of Ksubas, yeah. So like this though, if he went willingly and he knew that his master was planning to settle in Syria, then he has no further claim. The fact that he's selling him to somebody else there who's also living in Syria is neither here nor there. Whereas if Das Rabbi Lachzer, if his master originally brought him to Syria intending to return to Eretz Yisrael, and now he's going to go sell him to somebody in Syria, then the Eved has a valid claim. Wait a minute, I only went with you over here because I thought we're only going here temporarily. You're going to now sell me to somebody who lives here permanently? Nothing doing. Okay, the question is, not the question, this is actually the Hatanya over here is Benichusa, Rashi says, the Hatanya, and thus indeed we learn in a Braisa, Yotze Eved Acha Rabbi L'Suria, the master follows his master, the Eved follows his master to Syria. What do you mean? Yotze Eved Acha Rabbi L'Suria, the Eved follows his master to Syria.
Now, follows.
Well, Yotze makes it sound like he has to. So you might ask Yotze, what do you mean? What do you mean? He has to follow him. There's no choice that not. Well, it's not. We learned in that Mishnah in Ksuvah, that's the last Mishnah in Ksuvah, that you can't forcibly take, we talked a bit about a husband and wife, about a master and a slave, etc. You can't take them out of Eretz Yisrael against their will. Ella, what it means is not Yotze, but Yotze Eved Acha Rabbi L'Suria. So let's redo the Braisa. If the Eved follows his master to Syria, Mokhri Rabbi Sham, and his master sells him over there, Imdas Rabbi Lach. So if his master originally intended to return, Kofinoi, so then you can force him that we apply the Tanakh of our mission, you force the master to buy him back and set him free. Imdas Rabbi Lach, and Kofinoi, and if
he forced him into Syria.
What do you mean? There's lots of him in Syria.
So
he's in Syria. Yeah, he's talking about he sold him to a Yid in Syria, yeah. But, apparently they have bothered him over there, yeah. He means after Rabbi Lachzer and Kofinos, but to begin with, his master went there intending to settle there in the first place, and the Eved didn't protest. Then ain't Kofinos, so then you don't force him, because the Eved forfeited his right to that. Amar Rabbanan, Shamit Mineid Ma Shmuel Tarti. Now, Rabbanan says there were two dinim that I heard from Shmuel. Chodachach, one of them is this din about taking an Eved out to Syria. The Idach, and the other one, the Itmar, is a statement, is a discussion as follows.
Confirms.
Well, no. He's going to say that I'm not sure. He's going to say that of these two dinim, I'm confused. I don't remember which one Shmuel said the sale is a valid sale and which one not. So let's learn the other one, and then we'll see. The Idach, the Itmar, there's another one that I learned from Shmuel, which goes as follows. What happens if, we know that fields go back to their owners in Yovel. What happens if somebody sells this field during Yovel itself? Rav Amar Mechura V'Yotze, Rav says it is a valid sale, but it goes back to the original owner. Well, Shmuel Amar in a Mechura Kolita, where Shmuel says it's not even considered sold in the first place. Because a Kavachimer, fields that were already sold go back, how much more so? You can't sell one during Yovel. Now, about these two dinim, I remember that Shmuel said that in one of these two cases, you have the case of the Eved and you have the case of the field. In one of them, Shmuel said that the sale is undone and the money has to be given back to the original. To the buyer. On the other hand, in the other one, you don't say the money goes back. He lost his money. I don't know which one is which. I don't remember which one is which. Now, Rashi points out, you could argue very simple. You have to say that in the case of the field, you have to say that Shmuel would be saying that the sale is undone, because otherwise, what's the difference between him and Rav? Rav is saying Mechur of a Yotze, that it's sold, but it goes out in Yovel like any field. If Shmuel were to be saying that the sale is not a sale, what's the difference between him and Rav? So Rashi explains there would still be a practical difference. You could say, and Rashi mentioned the difference, and then Rashi and Bechoros mentioned another difference, and a number of other Rishonim and Acharonim talk about others. Rashi himself over here says the difference is that there's a din. We've touched on it before. The main place the main place is discussed is in Kiddushin. You have a din that there's something called Kinyan Agav. If you're makdeh to somebody land. And a law, you want to give somebody land, you want to give the same person also some of the Taufelin. The Taufelin, we know, there's various kinds of Kinyan. There's Meshicha, there's Hagbah, there's Chalifin, etc. If you give him land, as well as you're giving him the Taufelin, once he makes a Chazaka on the land, once you do a valid Kinyan on the land, for example, the transfer of money is a valid Kinyan for land, but not from a Taufelin, automatically the Taufelin go along with it. It's called Kinyan Agav. You might actually learn this from Pasuk over there.
He has to say, though.
So therefore, so now what would happen over here? In our case over here, you sold this field during Yovel. According to Rashi, that it's a valid sale that then returns to the owner. Fine, the field itself is returning to the original owner. But the metalphalim that went along with it, still, the Kenyan is valid on those, and those remain with the buyer. On the other hand, if you say like Shmuel, Einim Chorah Kol Iker, even if you were to say that Shmuel means that you undo, even if you were to say that according to Shmuel, that it means, the entire sale is undone, it means so are the metalphalim. They talk about different other possibilities.
If you say that the metalphalim go with the field, then it has to come back.
No, because that's the thing. During Yovel, if you sell somebody a field some other time, not during Yovel, and you give them a talcum and you sell the talcum along with it, obviously the field returns in Yovel and the talcum and no. So that's the thing. If we say the sale is a valid sale, it just gets overridden by Yovel, then fine. At least though the Kinyan on the talcum is a valid Kinyan. For a moment there, he owned that field, and therefore he was able to be current in the talcum along with it. Now he has to return the field to the other guy because it's Yovel. But nevertheless, the Kinyan of the talcum is a valid Kinyan. Elsewhere, there's a Gemara. Well, so that's what we're discussing. That's the question between Rav and Shmuel. But anyway, in other places, there's another place in Bechorot, where in Erchen, I think it is, where Rashi talks about another possible nafgamina of it. What if, for example, there were trees on the property and the buyer chopped them down? If you say he owned the property and then he has to return it, fine, he's allowed to keep that wood from the trees. If you say he never owned it in the first place, then...
He chopped them before Yovel?
No, the field was sold during Yovel,
right.
But he owned that field for a moment. So during that short period of time, he chopped down the trees. If we say that for a brief period of time he owned the field, fine, he had the right to chop down the trees. If not, then not. Anyway. Omer of Yosef, Nechzi Anan. So Rabbi Yosef says, you know what, fine, but let's figure it out logically. Mitatoni b'braisa. Now we have a braisa that goes as follows: Hamoicher abdi l'chel l'chutz l'arav yot l'cheirus v'tzarf get shechur me'abit sheni. We learned this braisa yesterday that somebody sells his eved to chutz l'arav, then that eved automatically goes free. However, he needs to get shechur from his second master. Now the fact that we're saying that he needs from the second master implies shmamina panir rabbi sheni v'lo hadri zini, which implies that it was a valid sale. The second master was koine him. And we don't say that the money has to go back. We just say that the second one now did a bad business deal over here. He did do a valid kinyan, but we're taking this away from him and making him be mashachar, the eved, and he's losing his money. So therefore, that's a knas, fine, but that's the thing. Rav Anan is saying there's two dinim I heard from Shmuel. One of them where we say that the original buyer gets back his money,
right,
and the other one where he doesn't. I'm not sure which is which. Based on that, we're saying that the sale is valid insofar as the second master is the one who gives him a get shikr, that implies the sale was valid. If the sale was valid, it means he doesn't get back his money. Tough luck. Therefore, therefore, by elimination, if in the case of the Eved Shmuel is saying the sale was a sale and the money is forfeited, then in the case of the field, it must be. That's the case where Shmuel said that it's not considered to be sold in the first place, and therefore the money has to be returned to the original buyer. Okay, so for Rav Anan, what would Rav Anan answer to that? Why, Taka, didn't he know which one is which? Braisa, Shmuel, okay, he didn't know this Braisa. The Amoraim aren't expected to be familiar with every Braisa. The image of Shmuel, and so you might answer, we could see it from Shmuel's actual statement, the very word that he says, Eina Mechura Kol Iker, might imply that it means, Kol Iker, maybe it means that itself would seem to imply that there was no sale here in the first place, and therefore the money has to be given back. No, Mimayda Eina Mechura, Moiz Chosrin, you can't prove it from that, because who says it means that it's not sold in the sense that the money has to be returned to the original buyer? You could argue that what Shmuel means is that the sale is not a sale for any purpose, for example, for what Rashi said about Kinyan Agav. However, the money is considered Mataninu. It's considered as if he gave it to him as a present. Needed to have a Makadosh Lachoyse, because we could compare it to the case of somebody who was Makadosh's sister. The Itmar, as in fact we have a discussion. If somebody gives money of Kedushin to his sister, now of course his sister, Kedushin are not Toifus, she's an Erva. Rabba and Mois Chosin, the Rab says the money has to be given back, because you know that there's no Kiddushin types in Rab Chosin, so therefore, obviously, if he gave it to her, obviously he didn't give it to her for Kiddushin, but he must have meant to give it to her as a Pekodin, as something to hold on to for the time being.
Matana.
Not Matana. Rab says as Pekodin. For Shmuel, I'm a Mois Matana. Shmuel says he must have given it to her as a present. She can keep it. By the same logic over here, when Shmuel says that the case of selling a field in Yovel, that the sale was not a sale, not necessarily. It doesn't mean the money is going back. Maybe this is just a roundabout way of this guy trying to give the other guy a present. Yeah. Okay. However, Amalei Abayah, no, Tosfos points out there is actually a reasonable distinction that you can make. The difference is that everybody knows your sister, you can't be Makadish. In the case of the field with Yovel, not necessarily does everybody know. As a matter of fact, you have Rav versus Shmuel's opinion. Nevertheless, you could still understand Shmuel that way. Amalei Abayah l'Rav Yosef. Yeah. Now Abayah asks Rav Yosef a more general question. My chos is to consider l'lekeach. Why are we saying, when you sell an eved to somebody, to another yid in chutz l'aretz, why are we penalizing the buyer and making him have to free the eved and forfeit his money? Nichnas elamoicha. Why don't we cancel the seller? That he shouldn't get his money back. According to Shmuel, we're saying v'loy hadri zvini, that we're saying over here, we said the lekeach is the one who ends up losing. He's the one who ends up, he doesn't get back his money. That's Shmuel had said, that he doesn't get back his money. And he has to free the Eved. No, when it comes to the Eved. So he doesn't get back his money. The Moicher keeps it. We said, V'loi hadri zvini. The sale is not undone. We only penalize him. Nichnas elamoicha. Why don't we instead cancel the seller? Why don't we say the money should go back? And the one who sold this Eved ends up losing the Eved and the money. On the way, so he says with that expression, "Lav achbar ganav al chodah ganav." It's not the mouse that's the thief; it's the hole that's the thief. Meaning, a mouse wouldn't steal if it didn't have a hole in the wall to run into, to escape from, to stash away what it takes, etc. In other words, it's a figure of speech. Meaning, this buyer, the buyer is the one. If there wasn't a buyer available, if there wasn't a, not really started the whole thing, but if there wasn't a buyer available, the seller wouldn't have anybody to sell to. So the buyer is more at fault.
But that's what I'm saying. He's not the buyer.
No, he started it, but whatever. The point is, if you can't find somebody to sell to, then you're not going to sell.
There's no seller, also.
Yeah, that's amole, ilah, achra, minole. Fine, but without the mouth, what good with the hole is not going to be able to accomplish anything.
Right.
The answer is fine, but the stabra hecha the ikki is sura hasan kansinan. Yes, but it makes more logical sense to say that where the issue is right now, that's where we should cancel. Since right now the lekeach is the one who has the evidence in his possession, therefore it makes more sense that he's the one who should be penalized. First, we should talk about it. Both of them are committing an issue, but right now, the Moshe for selling him and the Lekeach for buying him. But we're saying, because the Lekeach right now has it in his possession, therefore he's the one who we're going to cancel.
Well,
so,
say the Moshe,
he had him, but he doesn't right now. First, we talk about, is this a continuation of the thing about the mouse and the hole? Is it we're saying, after all said and done, the stash is in the hole right now? And therefore, or are we saying that? Are we saying never mind that idea? It's true in the case of the mouse and the hole. You could say both of them are at fault. But here we're not focusing more who was at fault. We're focusing where is the evidence right now.
In the case of a mouse and a hole, right? If there's no mouse and there is a hole, nothing's going to happen.
That's what I'm saying. One way of looking at it is the Gemara is continuing on that. Is continuing using that analogy. It's true. Without the mouse, there wouldn't be a hole. Nevertheless, the fact is That's what I mean. Nevertheless, the fact is, right now, there is a stash in that hole. And therefore, that's where we should be focusing on. Other Mepharshim say that, no, the Gemara is saying, never mind that analogy. You're right, that analogy is flawed. Instead, let's just focus on, never mind mice, never mind holes. It's true both of them did something wrong. But right now, the fact of the matter is, the evidence is by this guy, and therefore he's the one who gets penalized.
Also, flawed, because you could say the evidence was by the Mepharshim.
But he was, but right now he's not.
So the Mecha was really shoes.
Yeah.
No problem with
what do you mean
the Mecha? No, the Mecha wasn't. No, it wasn't their shoes because
no.
He wasn't allowed to sell
it.
If no, it was the Issur. Both of them.
But it wasn't the Mecha.
Well, when the Eved belonged to the Mecha, that's true. That was their shoes. He came to this Lekeach. He came to this buyer. That already was Shaloi. When he entered his possession, he's already Shaloi their shoes. That's what we're saying.
But that's because of the Mecha.
Fine, but the fact is, right now, he's in the Lekeach's possession. All right, no, come on. Let's move on. There is an issue, yeah. So, Ms. Faber, Hecha, the Ikki is sort of Hoffman Kansin, and where the issue exists right now, the evidence is in the hands of the Lakea, he's the one who gets penalized. New case. There was a slave who escaped from Chutzlaret to Eretz Yisrael. Also, Morei Abastri, so his master follows him to Eretz Yisrael to try and get him back. Also, Kamei Rabami, he comes to Rabami. As a Rav, Amalei, the master comes to Rabami. Amalei, nichtiv loch shtar adame, let him or let us write out a shtar for you for his value. Uksev legitid dechirusa, and you write him a get shichur. In other words, at this point, you're responsible to make him free. We'll reimburse you, but you're responsible to make him free. The Eloi, and if you're not willing to write him that get shichur, ma pakna leminach, then I will take him away from you, and you won't get paid. Midir Rav Achid b'Rav Yoshia, based on what Rav Achid b'Rav Yoshia says. What does he say? Well, we'll get to in a few lines what he says, but we're going to have a braisa that goes into the details. The Tanya. The Pasuk says, Lo yeshu ba'artzecha penyachti ois chaliva gomer. The goyim are not allowed to dwell in your land. It's talking about the Shiva woman, the seven nations of Canaan. You're not allowed to let them dwell in the land. Penyachti ois chaliva, because they may make you sin to me. You'll learn from their ways. So you would think the Pasuk is talking about a goy who accepted on himself not to worship Avodah Zarah. No, Talmud Lomar. Therefore, we have a different pasuk. Loisaskiv ever daladonov. Don't hand back. Don't surrender away an eved to his master. Asher yinotzei lelecha meim adonov, who gets removed to you. Yinotzei, Rashi explains. Rashi explains is a lotion of removing. Asher hitzil lelechim meavinu, for example. Asher yinotzei lelecha meim adonov, who gets removed for you. To you from his master. So Rashi explains, in other words, what we're understanding the pasuk to mean. If you read the pasuk at face value, it would mean you have an eved who runs away from his master. Don't hand him back to that master. We're going to see in the sugya over here that's not what the pasuk means. here, at this point, we're understanding the pasuk to mean that if you have somebody who was an eved to his master being the avodah zarah that he was worshipping up until now, and now he's removing himself from that and renouncing avodah zarah, don't return him, don't make him leave your area of Eretz Yisrael, where he'll go back to worshipping his idols. My takanase. So what is what?
Keep him in Eretz
Yisrael. So what? My takanase. How do you fix things up for him? As the pasuk continues, im chayesha b'kibah chavagomer, he can dwell among you. He can dwell among you in Eretz Yisrael. So therefore, in other words, so far, what the Braita is telling us is a guy who worships Avodah Zarah is not allowed to live in Eretz Yisrael, but a guy who is accepted on himself not to worship Avodah Zarah is allowed to. It's about him that the pasuk is talking about. Lo sasku el adonim. However, v'kashalei l'Rav Yoshi. However, Rav Yoshi has a problem with that understanding. Hai me'im adonah. What do you mean that you're calling it from his master? Me'im oviv mi'bolei. The expression should be that he's escaping from his father, who is trying to convince him to no, his father, meaning his biological father, the pashtus. When he tries to renounce Avodah Zarah, his father is going to try to get him back. He's going to try to deprogram him from this cult that he's getting into, you know, and then get him back to his old ways. Or on the side over here, it says that in Yalkut Shimoni, there's a gusa that instead of Ovid, it should be Elikov. Asher Yinotzel Avachamim Elikov. He's being removed from his god. Mibolei is what it should say in the pasuk, if that's what it means. Ella, Amar Rabbi Yoshi. Yes or no? Rabbi Yoshi says the pasuk is talking about something different. The pasuk is talking about somebody who sells his slave to somebody in Chutz La'aretz. So therefore, again, Yinotzel means that he's being removed. Asher Yinotzel Elecha Me'im Adonav would mean that he's being removed from you. He's being removed from Eretz Yisrael and being taken out to Chutz La'aretz. So don't return him to his master. Let him stay living in Eretz Yisrael.
He doesn't worship
Avodah Zarah. No. Now we're getting off the Avodah Zarah thing. Now Rabbi Yoshia's understanding of the pasuk has nothing to do with a guy who's renounced Avodah Zarah. Now we're dealing with an Eved Knani who was in Eretz Yisrael. He was working for his master in Eretz Yisrael, and now his master wants to take him to Chutz La'aretz, as in the previous sugya.
And then the meaning is
you don't let him do that. He has to stay in Eretz Yisrael. Because but the kashalel of Achiv Rav Yoshia, so in turn of Achiv Rav Yoshia, the pashtus Rav Yoshia's son, had a problem with that also. Hayashah yinatzel elecha, then what's the expression that he gets removed to you? Hayashah yinatzel me'imcha mi'bayla, he gets removed from you. Me'imcha, you who are living in Eretz Yisrael, is getting removed from your area. Elo amar of Achiv Rav Yoshia, the eved shebarach mechutz la'aretz la'aretz hakasim adabah. No, it's the other way around. We're talking about an eved who was in Chutz La'aretz, he escaped from his master in Chutz La'aretz and came to Eretz Yisrael. And the pasuk is saying, don't, and the pasuk is saying, Eilecha, he's coming to you, so therefore don't return him to his master in Chutz La'aretz, let him stay in Eretz Yisrael. So therefore, now, returning to our story over here, that's why Rav Ami is telling this guy, you ever have to stay in Eretz Yisrael no matter what. If you agreeable to write him a get shechru, then fine, we'll arrange that you'll get reimbursed, that he'll owe you the money, and eventually he'll pay it up. If you don't, then we're going to take him, and then we're going to apply Rav Achiv Rav Yoshia's din, and he's going to remain in Eretz Yisrael willy-nilly, and you're going to just forfeit everything. I thought we should talk about actually the details. Is it possible maybe that he can keep him as an eved in Eretz Yisrael? Maybe the master can agree to also move to Eretz Yisrael and then still be able to keep him as an eved. Some of the Forshim say, yes, that would have been a valid option also. And then Rav Ami is not saying, we're going to take him away from you. He just means, you have your choice. You can either get reimbursed for him, or you can move to Eretz Yisrael, or you're going to lose everything altogether. Other Forshim say that not. Once he's in Eretz Yisrael, then that's it. So that automatically he has the right to be free. The Rambam, I don't remember, actually. I don't remember. If I remember correctly, the Rambam does say that he goes free no matter what. That the master doesn't have the right to keep him as a slave in Eretz Yisrael. I'm not sure about that point, though.
The second way for property
is because it's kind of... Yeah, there's an idea. The Chinuch talks about it. I think the Rambam also talks about it. I think in Moreh Nevuchim or something, that the very fact that now he wants to come and be in the Holy Land in Eretz Yisrael gains him a certain privilege that he wouldn't have had before yet. Tanya, we learn in another braisa. The pasuk says, "Lo sasku eved el adonav." Again, so the pasuk says, "Don't hand over a slave to his master when he comes to you." Rebbe Omer, this is another possibility. Rebbe says, "V'lekech eved amanach l'shachra akosam medaber." We're talking about somebody who bought an eved on condition that he's going to free him. So therefore, then the mitzvah is that Beis Din has to enforce that that's exactly what happened. The master is not the one who bought him is not allowed to turn around and say, you know what, I changed my mind, I paid for you, I want to keep you as an eved. Hechidomi, so what was the situation? How exactly did he buy him in such a way that that agreement to be meshacher him would be valid? Amrav Nachmi, the kasav leitachi, if he wrote him like this in the shtar, liksheetochacha, when I buy you, then as of now, you have acquired yourself. So therefore, as soon as he buys him, he's meshukra as of the moment when that is the mafreya. Rashi says over here that actually that this would have to be according to the opinion that odem makna dover shalai bol olam, that you're able to make a kinyan on something that doesn't yet exist because he hasn't bought it yet at this point. He bought him to do a mitzvah opinion, shvuyim, whatever it is, but the point is he can't turn around afterwards and say, you know what, I changed my mind. You might tell the case. Rav Chista orak le'avdil abei kusoi. Rav Chista had a slave who ran away to Bei Kusoi, to a place where Kusim lived. Now Rav Chista lived in Babel, which is in Chutz Laaretz. This Bei Kusoi was also in Chutz Laaretz. Sholach lehu, so he sent to the Kusim a message. Hadru anili, return him to me. Sholkulei, they sent him back. What are you talking about? The pasuk says, "Le'sasker evad adayno." Don't return an escaped slave to his master. Sholach lehu, so they argued. These are Kusim. They know. They keep Torah Shavasav. So the pasuk says that at face value, I mean, if an evad escapes, don't return him. No fugitive slave laws. Sholach lehu. What? No, later on, by Rav Chista times already, they were considered Ovid Avodah Zarah because they found that they were worshipping a dove on Hagrizim, although I don't know, maybe not the Kusim of Chutzlot, I don't know. Whatever it is, they knew of Torah Shabbat Sab, and look, Torah Shabbat Sab says you don't return an escaped slave, so what do you want from us? Shalach Lohu, so he sent back to them. Listen, another pasuk says, V'chein tas l'chamur, v'chein tas l'simlosa, you have to do a Shabbat Aveda, you have to return his donkey, you have to return his garment, v'chein tas l'chol Aveda Sachicha, you have to return anything that your fellow Jew loses, including an Eved. Sholchulei, so they said back to him, fine, Vaksiv Leisaskya Eved Adonim, what are you doing with that pasuk about not returning an escaped slave? Sholach Lohu, so he sent back to them, Ha'uhu be'Eved Shibarach Mechutz La'aretz La'aretz. That is specifically talking about an Eved who escaped from Chutz La'aretz to Eretz Yisrael. The Chidur of Achi B'Rav Yoshia, L'Achir Achi B'Rav Yoshia explained the pasuk before, that's talking about that specific case. In this case, we're all in Chutz La'aretz, therefore he doesn't have any basis to be free. Okay, the question is, why specifically did he send them that I'm agreeing with Rav Achabir Rav Yoshia's explanation? Why didn't he send them that we can also explain the pasuk the way Rebbe said it? That it's talking about somebody who bought an Eved al-Manas to free him. The answer is, because Rav Achabir Rav Yoshia's understanding is closest to the simple meaning of the words of the pasuk. Now, the Kusim believe in Torah Shabbat Sab, they don't believe in Torah Shabbat Peh, they don't believe in all the Midrashim of the Chachamim. So if you were to send them, if you were to tell them, I hold like Rebbe's understanding of the Pasuk, they would say that doesn't fit with the wording of the Pasuk, because it's a very far-fetched case. Therefore, he sent them that I hold like Rav Achi Rav Yeshia's understanding, which is closer to the simple meaning, so that they would accept it. Okay. Another case, speaking of Chachamim, because that's the point. You have to explain to them this is what the pasuk means. You think it means at face value any Eved who runs away from his master, you're not allowed to return him to his master. No, that's not what the pasuk means. It's talking about the specific case of an Eved who runs away from Chutz Laaretz to Eretz Yisrael.
But why do you have to say it's in the name of Rabbi Yoshia?
He didn't have to say the words Rabbi Achi Rabbi Yoshia. He said when he said Vichid Rabbi Achi Rabbi Yoshia, that might be the Gemara's editorializing. That's how is he explaining it? He's explaining it like Rabbi Achi Rabbi Yoshia. Yeah. Another case, it's a minion by Sadian, about another one of the Amiroim who lost something and had to deal with the Kusim about it. Abaya Irkas Lechamra Bei Kusoi, Abaya lost a donkey in this Bei Kusoi, this area where Kusim live. Sholachu Shadru Ali, so he sent him a message, return it to me. Sholachu Shlach Simona, so they sent back to him, okay, give us a simon. Sholachu Dechivra Kresi, he sent back a message to them, it has a white belly. Sholchulei, so they sent back a message to him, you know what, we will return it, but you should know something, he loved the Nachmeni, if it weren't for the fact that you're Nachmeni, which we learned the other day, is Abaya's name or nickname or whatever, the distinguished Talmid Chacham, we know Rashi says that you're a Chacham, that's not a Chacham, a Chassid, we know that you're a Chassid, and you're not going to lie, if it weren't for that, lo have a Meshadanulei in the Allah, we would not send it back to you on the basis of that simon, because it's not a very good simon. Alter kula chamri lav kresai, don't all donkeys have white bellies? Meaning, it's not all maybe, but many of them, it's not a simon muhak. So first they're saying we want a simon, meaning they thought, so the first we talk about that first they were thinking maybe that it's good enough if he has tvias ayin, because he's Hamad Chacham, then they figured, you know what, given that there is a simon available, better we should ask him for a simon. He gives them
for a simon muhak.
That's the thing. So they asked for a simon. So he gave them a simon. And they said, you know what, that's not the kind of simon we were thinking of, but since you're Talmud Chacham and we know that you're not going to lie, then we'll return it to you based on your Tevias Ayin. The question is, why would they ask for a simon if they don't believe in Medrash Chacham? The pasuk doesn't say word about simon. Fine, but the pasuk says just plain common sense. They would have to know. You have to give some kind of simon. Yeah. Mishnah says, "Ain't poydin es hashvurin yotze akidei demei and mepnei tikkun olam." You're not allowed to. You're not allowed to ransom captives, Jews who were captured by goyim. You're not allowed to ransom them for more than they're worth. Mipnei tikkun olam, because of tikkun olam, for reasons which the Gemara will talk about. You're also not allowed to help captives escape, again, because of tikkun olam. Reb Shimon Gamliel says it's not a matter of tikkun olam, it's a matter of for the sake of the other captives themselves. So what all this means, let's learn the Gemara. Indeed, we'll talk about that in a second. They had a question, Amirayim. What do we mean when we're saying that you don't redeem them for more than they're worth because of Tikkun Olam? What is the Tikkun Olam involved? Is it because we don't want to put this tremendous financial burden on the Tzibur? They're going to become poor just to redeem some Shuyim. Or maybe it's because we don't want to give the goyim an incentive to capture ligru, meaning to grab and take more captives. If they see that they can sell them for high prices, they're going to have an incentive to do this more. Tashma, come, let's bring a proof. The lady by Gauga, the place of Alpha Dinner is of. Lady by Gauga ransomed his daughter from kidnappers for 13,000 gold dinars, which is much more than she'd be worth on the slave market or whatever. So therefore we see that it must be a matter of Jukka de Tzibura. So for him to go and start collecting tzedakah from the Tzibura for it, no, you can't do that. But if he himself is rich and voluntarily and has 13,000 gold dinar available, then evidently there's not a problem.
Who was exactly?
However, Amar Abaye, Uman Leimel, under B'Tzen Chachamim Avad. Fine, but who says he did that with the consent of the Chachamim? Maybe he did it without the consent of the Chachamim, so you can't prove one way or the other from it. Now, Tosfos brings in over here that, first of all, Tosfos brings in two things over here. First of all, we learned in Ksubas that one of a husband's responsibilities to his wife is to ransom her if she gets captured. And we learned over there that even if they demand up to 10 times what she's worth. So what are you, up to 10 times? But 10 times is still a lot more than she's worth. So on the slave market or whatever, so what's the difference?
Maybe he's wife.
So Tosef says that's the difference, his wife, Ishtiki Gufay. A daughter is not so much like yourself, but a man's wife is considered like part of himself. And Tosef says, a person himself can ransom himself for whatever it takes. As the famous expression goes, Kol Asher L'Ish, Yitin Bad Nafshi, a person will spend whatever it takes for his own needs.
What about the Eretz Yisrael? They have this problem all the time.
If you're talking about that's a little different. First of all, there is the problem that Gemara is saying over here that you're encouraging them to do it again. But second of all, there you're actually releasing dangerous terrorists from jail where they can Rahman al-Islam do things. That's a whole different matter than just giving them money. That's a whole different. And not necessarily. I mean, the Shalit deal, for example, was not necessarily a good sign for Chachamim. Ligruva means they'll grab the life to and take. Yeah. Anyway, other mafoshim, the Rashba gives another reason. We learned over there in Ksubas why Bechlal does the husband have the requirement to ransom his wife in the first place, because in return he gets the payrus from her nechassim. So therefore, effectively, it is that she's getting ransomed out of her own estate. Therefore. Out of her own finances. So then you don't even need what Tosfos is saying that Ishtik is good for. Again, a person is allowed to ransom themselves. Anyway, then Tosfos brings in another point. In the next parak, when we learn the whole story here with the Agadah about the Churban, we're going to learn the famous story where Rabbi Yeshua went to Rome and he found over there a boy in jail. and he ransomed him, and this boy grew up to be the famous Tanner, Rabbi Shmuel. And Rabbi Yeshua says over there that I'll pay whatever it takes. I'll pay all the money in the world to get him out of jail. What kind of all the money in the world, based on our Mishnah? So one answer, Tosfos gives a couple of answers. One is that he was an unusual Talmid Chacham, as we see in the story over there. Another, so therefore that's an exception. That's an exception. Another explanation Tosfos says is because practically speaking, at that time, what are we saying over here in our Gemara? If the reason is why you can't redeem them for more than what they're worth, because you don't want to encourage the going to do more than this, at this time they're anyway doing this. So they're anyway kidnapping Jews right and left from Israel. It's not like there's anything to be lost by doing this. And in that sugya on Daf Nun Ches, Tosfos gives a third answer, which is it was a matter of pikuach nefesh. This child's life was in danger. Other Rishonim have it. Ramban acts on Tosfos exactly that. But yeah, anytime somebody's captured by going, his life is in danger. So the Ramban doesn't like that explanation. You're mentioning the case of Myron Rutenberg. Now, when you think about it, yes, the Marshal brings it on our Gemara. In principle, given Tosfos' first answer, Muflag B'Chachma, there's no question that Myron Rutenberg was Muflag B'Chachma. By rights, they should have redeemed him with whatever it takes. However, he told them that not. He specifically told them not. Why? Because of our Gemara. Because of the reason our Gemara is saying the Lord is group of Elisu. We don't want to give them the incentive to do this more. And in fact, the Marshal says it worked. The fact is, the Goyish rulers at that time never tried this kind of thing again because they saw it didn't work. Madame Rippenberg. Even after his death for 14 years until finally a Yid bought out, bought his body, bought the right to take his body and bury it. Yeah. He's buried in Worms, in Germany. Yeah, actually, there's a double Maseva over there. This rich Yid, Alexander Ziskind, his name was. His only request was, he spent this fortune to get Myron Rutenberg's body out of jail and bury it. His only request was that he should be buried next to Myron Rutenberg. The Kahava, and there's a double tombstone over the two of them.
Yeah. Still standing.
Still, as far as I know, it's still standing. I don't know. So now the Gemara is going to tell a story. Before we get to the story, the Ein Mavrichin Es HaShvuyim, the Mishnah said that you don't help captives escape. Again, Mepnei Tikkun HaOlam, Reb Shimon Gamliel, Mepnei Tikkun HaShvuyim. But my Binayu, the Gemara says, no, that's what we're talking about. Wait. My Binayu, the question is, what's the difference between the two reasons? Tikkun HaOlam, again, would mean that in the future, Tikkun Olam would mean for the sake of the rest of the people. You don't want if Jews are captured by Goyim and other Jews are going to help them escape, they may take it out on the rest of the people. As opposed to Tikkunas Shvuyin would mean they may take it out on the other captives. So what's the difference? The answer is Ikebinar Galak Alakad. What if there's only one captive right now? If you say it's Tikkun Olam, yes, they may still in the future when they capture Jews, they're going to put them under lock and chain. To prevent, because they know that other Jews are going to help them escape otherwise. As opposed to if we say Tikkunas HaShvuyim, like Reb Shimon Gamliel says, only if there's other captives there could they take it out on them. If there's no other captives now, they're not going to take it out on other captives later because this one escaped now, because it's not like they helped them or anything. Now, okay, so now, so first of all, again, the distinctions that Tosfos makes over there, especially the distinction about the Koach Nefesh might be relevant over here. There is actually, there's a truva from one of the Rabbanim in the years after the Holocaust discussing when people helped other Jews escape from the ghettos. He said that's different. The fact is everybody was in danger of being killed by the Nazis anyhow. The more you help people get out. We're talking about over here where right now they're being captured to be sold as slaves or what have you. With that also said, by the way, the Chavis Yoreh says, we're talking about over here, you can't help other captives escape, but a captive himself can do whatever it takes. And in fact, some of the Farshim say, we're going to see that from the next story in the Gemara about Rav Elish, where in fact, when he had the chance to, he escaped. A captive himself can do whatever it takes. He doesn't have to worry. The Chavis Yoreh says, it's not even midas chassidus to worry about the possible repercussions of it when it's talking about yourself. But when it's talking about somebody else, then you have to consider the repercussions on the tzibur or on the other captive.
they're not going to take it out of there. The
yes, they will.
So they will.
No, but they still are going to think. They still are going to think that the other captives have something to do with it. They could, yes. Nevertheless, a person is allowed to save their life. A person is allowed to do whatever it takes to save their
life. I agree, but what I'm questioning is the fact that other person cannot save that person's life.
Because then you have the issue. Then you have the famous issue. My chazus, the dama di gei, sumach tfei. Who says that one person's life is worth more than the other? Mashenkin, if it's your own life, you have an ability to do whatever it takes to save your life.
One second. If you cannot save the community, you cannot save someone's life, then it's going to give a tremendous incentive for the goyim to do more of it.
No.
They don't know that nobody will come to help them.
No, they're going to come to help them by buying them back, by doing pidyon shvuyim, not by helping them escape.
But if they cannot do pidyon shvuyim.
What do you mean if they can't?
Of course, if they can do it pidyon shvuyim.
So then they're going to do pidyon shvuyim. No, one second. So if the goyim are going to accept, that's the thing. We just learned the first. Hold on. So the first part of the mission is you don't pay too much, because that'll give them an incentive to do it again and again.
Okay.
Good. So if they know that you're not going to pay more than a certain amount.
Right.
But on the other hand, you're not going to help them escape. That'll give them an incentive. On the one hand, it'll say, you know what, why should we bother kidnapping Jews? We're not going to get that much for them anyway. And if they do kidnap them, figuring they'll get a ransom, they won't treat them as harshly. That's what they're just going to owe them, knowing that they're not going to all of a sudden wake up the next morning and find that they're...
Only if their intent is to get money. But if their intent is to kill...
If their intent is, that's the case of the Nazis. That's different. That's different. That's what I'm saying. That's why you have a tshuva, that I was mentioning. The Gemara is not talking about that. The Gemara is talking about where they're capturing them for monetary
money.
Okay. So, the Gemara tells the case. The daughters of Reb Nachman used to stir hot pots with their bare hands, meaning that the heat doesn't affect them, which makes it look like they're tittonious, exceptional tittonious. Bachshin means they stir. Rav Ilish wondered about that. See, there's a pasuk in Tehillim that says, Adam Echa Me'elef Matzasi, I found one man in 1,000, V'isha B'cholel Olam Matzasi, but I didn't find a woman among all these, meaning only one out of 1,000 is a tzaddik on that level, and not even among those do you have any women. Now, what do you mean? There's lots of tzaddikim out there. So maybe if Mephoshim talk about it, means that, for example, we find there's tzaddikim who publicly were saved from fire. We don't find any cases of women in Jewish history who very publicly were saved from fire like that. So what's going on over here? Or you could been saved to Reb Nachman. Don't we have Reb Nachman's daughters? So doesn't that contradict the passage? This caused something to happen to them, meaning Marshall says the very fact that Ilish had this question caused the Eidrish to brought it about that they were captured in order that the truth will eventually come out. The Ishtabian, they were captured by Goyim. The Ishtabai, Iunami Padayu, and he, Rav Ilish, was also captured, kidnapped together with him. One day, he was sitting together with somebody, I guess another captive over there, Rav Yachadem then says it was a Goy, who knew the language of birds. Also, so a raven, crow, came and started calling him. Amalei my farmer, sort of Ilish asks this guy, what is the bird saying? Amalei, he's saying, Ilish brach, Ilish brach. Ilish, run away, Ilish, run away. Omar, sort of Ilish says, you know what? No. Urva shikruhu, a raven is a liar. We see when Noach sent out the raven to do its mission, to go and check whether the earth is dry, it wouldn't go. So a raven is not trustworthy. I guess, and therefore I'm not going to rely on it. Adahochi also yonim kakaria. Then a dove came and started calling out. Amalei my kamra. So again, Rav Ilish asks this guy, what is it saying? Amalei Ilish brach, Ilish brach. Amar. So now he says to himself, Knesset Yisrael ki yonim asilu. The Jewish people are compared in Shir Hashirim and in other places to a dove. To a dove. You have a pasuk, for example, Piskli Achosi Yoyasi Yonasi Tamasi. This shows then the fact that now a dove is coming and saying this message shows that a nes is going to happen to me. Interesting thing, by the way, that Gilyon HaShas brings from the Aruch that we see from this Gemara that Ilish understood the language of birds. And the Sefer HaDorot says, what are you talking about? You see, Abba, he didn't know the language. You have to ask this guy what they're saying. So they give an interesting answer. I saw an interesting answer. He did know the language of the birds, but he was concerned when he hears first the raven and then the dove saying Ilish Brach, Ilish Brach. He's thinking to himself, what if I'm just wishful thinking? I understand what the birds are saying, but maybe I want so badly to hear it that that's what I'm hearing. Let me check with this guy. If he says that that's what it is, then I'll know that it's true.
So
he understood it, but he was afraid that maybe it's wishful thinking. So he wanted confirmation. Shmamina misrichishli nisa, which this means then that a nest will happen to me. Omer. So now he figures to himself, Ezel Esed bin Sidra Nachman, he came in Behemoth Nusayu Adrinu. Let me go check on the daughters of Reb Nachman, who were also captured and are here around here. If they still stayed faithful to Yiddishkeit, and let me also bring them back also. Let me have them escape with me, or at least arrange for once I get back home for Pidyon Shvuyim, whatever. That's true, I guess. But I guess for one thing, because
they're not married.
Goyim, whatever. Yeah. Omar, so he says to himself, Noshi kol mili di islahu sandra lahadodi b'metakise. Women, anytime they have things to talk about with each other, they tell it to each other when they go to the bathroom. Yeah, indeed. So he goes near the bathroom, near the outhouse. Shaminu the kamra, and he overhears them saying, Adi Gurin, these people, these men who captured us, are our husbands. So Naharda Gurin and the people in Naharda are our old husbands, and Naharda are also our husbands. In other words, we're just as good, we're just as well off over here with these guys as we were with our husbands back home. Let's tell our captors, these goyim who captured us, to take us far away from here. So that our husbands don't hear that we're here, and then they're gonna hear about it and come ransom us. We don't want to be ransomed, basically. So, okay, in that case, then forget about them. Well, practically speaking, yeah, one thing could be if they were going to be, and in fact he found that they were, then he can't take them with him because they may give away the secret. Then he won't get away either. Come Arak, so he got up and ran away. Also, Iyubahu got, come Arak also, he got up, he ran away and went. Iyubahu got, he along with this other guy, to him, to Rav Ilish, a net happened. To him, a net happened. Over B'mavra, he was able to cross the ferry and get home safely. That other guy was discovered and killed. Ki hadron v'os, and eventually these women, Rav Nachman's daughters, came back. Rashi says, Marsha says, they were actually ransomed against their will. Remember, we said that they were telling each other, we don't want to be ransomed, we'd rather just stay with these goyim. Eventually, though, once Rav Ilish came back home, I guess he informed Rav Nachman and company of what's going on, and they went and ransomed them against their will. So when they came back, and they continued with this business of stirring the pots with their bare hands, Omar, so now Rav Ilish said, have a kabash and kidra b'kshofet. Now we understand that all this time, before and also now, they're stirring these pots not because of tikkunis, but because of kishur. And there's a chassam sofer, and talk about the idea that what Nachman is saying to himself, you know what, if it had been that previously they did it, and now they're not doing it anymore, fine. You could say originally they were tzitzonit, under the pressure, yeah, they might have been there 20 years or whatever, they cracked Stockholm Syndrome or whatever. Now that we see that they're going back to doing the same thing as before, making themselves look like tzitzonit, we can't assume they did shuvah. There's no reason to assume that unless we have evidence of it. Therefore, we have to assume that the whole thing was a matter of kishuv in the first place. Interesting thing that's brought from Sefer Av Gilgulim is that these daughters of Rav Nachman are Gilgul of the two daughters of Lot, and Rav Ilish is a Gilgul of the king of Sodom. We find that the king of Sodom fell into the slime pits over there and he got out safely, but the king of Amorah also fell in there and didn't. Same similar to what we have over here, that Rav Ilish got away safely and the other guy didn't. So the Ramah Mifano brings that in Gilgul and Neshamah. Mishnah says, You also don't buy away Sifrei Torah or Tefillin and Mezuzot from Goyim Yosu Akadei Demeyan for more than what they're really worth. Again, make Tikkun HaOlam. Again, Rashi says the same reasons as before. Number one, again, the Tikkun HaOlam is either of the two reasons the Gemara said before. Either it'll be a great financial burden on the tzibur, or that it'll give them an incentive to do it more. Yeah, or both, yeah. The Gemara says, Amaleta Budgila Rashi, that implies, the Mishnah is implying, that you don't buy them from Goyim for more than they're worth. Evidently, though, you can buy them for as much as they're worth. Now, Shmamina, Sefer Torah, Shemitz, we have to come and clear anybody. Does this prove a topic which we're going to have a machloikus about in the Gemara in a minute, that if you find a Sefer Torah in the hands of a Goyim, in the hands of a Goy, you're allowed to lean in it, you're not worried that the Goy himself wrote it and maybe had a Vodizara in mind? Because evidently, why else would the Mishnah be implying that you buy the Sefer Torah, Tefillin and Mezuzahs from Goyim? Why not? A Goy can be literate in Hebrew and write a Sefer Torah. Maybe, yes, right. The answer is no. Duma lignos. Maybe that, not necessarily. Maybe what the Mishnah is saying is that, yes, you have to buy them from the Goyim, not to use them in shul, but to put them in gniza. So therefore you have a requirement to buy them back from the Goyim for their fair market value, just so that they're not, just in case it is a kosher, a sefer Torah, and then it would be a bazillion for it to stay by the Goyim. But just in case, on the other hand, the Goyim may have written it, therefore maybe you can't lane with it, as we'll have the machlokas soon, maybe instead you have to just put it in Geneva. Well, yes and no. In Shulchan Aruch it says that it depends. First of all, there's a difference between Sfarim versus Tefillin and Mezuzahs. So a Sefer Torah, a Goy might well write just to learn from it. Tefillin and Mezuzahs, nobody's gonna write them unless he's actually going to use them. So therefore, there's less of an issue with Tefillin and Mezuzahs. Second of all, it says in Shulchan Aruch, if it's a period of time when we know that Goyim are stealing Sefer Torah, or like during the Holocaust, when the Nazis are confiscating Sefer Torah and then keeping them in warehouses or whatever, then you can assume that the Sefer Torah came from a Yid. You don't have to worry about this possibility that a Goy wrote it. The Shach also adds if it's a time when Goyim are illiterate, then you can assume if the time and place when Goyim are illiterate, then you can assume a Yid wrote it.
Implying that there has been times when they wrote it, which is not the right
thing. Apparently, yeah. There's an interesting verse they say on the expression Minig Yisrael Torah. We know, we just had a Siyum Sefer Torah here last week. The minhag is that by Siyum Sefer Torah, that the sofer does the outlines of the last few letters, and then you honor various people to fill those in. Which means those last few letters usually come out looking a little more irregular than a Sefer Torah. So somebody said a verse that's brought from various people, that the minhag Yisrael Torah, if you find that this minhag Yisrael is kept and the last few letters are irregular Torah, then you can assume it's a kosher of Sefer Torah.
And
if not, then you may have them. Yeah. Amar Rav Nachman, Naktinan, we know the Kabbalah, Sefer Torah shekosve min yisarek. A Sefer Torah that was written by a min should be burnt. Now, what's a min? Rashi says it's somebody who's very into Avodah Zarah. He's going koimer, Rashi says, like, for example, a priest. So we're not just talking about somebody who, like, worships Avodah Zarah out of habit. This is a guy who's very deeply into it. Why not? A Yid is a Yid, but the fact is he might be working as a priest. He might be very into Avodah Zarah. So you saw it. You have to burn it. Rashi says the reason is because he definitely wrote it for Shem Avodah Zechavim. The Rambam says a little differently. It's not so much that he definitely wrote it for Avodah Zarah, but he definitely didn't write it with the Kedusha of the Sefer Torah in mind, and therefore we want to burn it so there shouldn't be any remnant left of such people. Kosva Avodah Zechavim Yigonez. If a Goy wrote a Sefer Torah, then it has to be put in Geniza. Nimtza b'yad min yigonez, if you only find the Sefer Torah in the hands of a min, so maybe he wrote it, maybe a yid wrote it, yigonez, and you have to put it in geniza. Nimtza b'yad eved kochavim, what happens if you find the Sefer Torah in the hands of a goy? Amrila yigonez v'amrila koden goy. Some say that it has to also be put in geniza. Others say you can actually lane with it. Why would you be able to lane with it? Rashi says because it would be a sfek sfeka. Maybe a yid wrote it, and even if it's not a yid wrote it, even if a goy wrote it, maybe he wrote it not in the name of Avodah Zarah, maybe he wrote it in order to sell to Jews. And this is going according to their opinion, which the Gemara is going to continue discussing, whether a goy can validly write a Sefer Torah. But, yeah. Obviously that's what we're talking about, yeah. Tosfa says no. It's rather because it's much more. It's not a matter of sex faith. Tosfa says it's much more likely that a Yid wrote the Sefer Torah. Because it's very unlikely that a Goy writes the Sefer Torah. It's possible, but it's much less likely. So therefore, if you know the Goy wrote it, that's different. If you only find it in his hand, then not even a sex faith, but then it's the overwhelming majority is it was written by a Yid.
I remember when the
Yeah, well, that's how Rashi is learning it. Rashi is learning it as a spek tzeka. Tosfos is saying, never mind the spek tzeka. We can assume that a yid wrote. We can assume to begin with that a yid wrote it.
Can you say that the goy will change the Torah just because the Baal HaVeit Nari doesn't want?
So you'll check. You'll make sure that it's written properly.
That's one of the point. If you make sure it's written properly.
No, but that's the point. In other words, we're discussing the next thing the Gemara is going to discuss. We have to break for Ma'ariv now. Maybe after Ma'ariv we can come back for a few minutes and then get to the Mishnah. But if everybody's okay with that. But the Gemara is going to discuss now the question: do we assume that the goy necessarily had a Bedazara in mind? Well, maybe not. Maybe he wrote it with valid intention. So, okay, that's still going to be the question, can a goy validly write it Lashma? But at least maybe he didn't have a Bedazara intentions when he wrote it. That's the next thing the Gemara is going to take up. Break the mitzvah, and nobody minds. Come back here.